I find the parable in the gospel this morning to be a little bit puzzling, as many of the parables are. Jesus says that there was a rich man whose land produced abundantly, and he has to decide what he's going to do with his wealth. And he has a little conversation with himself, and he asks himself what he should do, and he quickly decides that what he should do is build bigger barns and store the wealth that he has gained so that he can have enough for his future to live on and be at peace. Seems to me that that makes perfect sense. What he's done, basically, is build up a retirement account. And all of us know that that's good financial planning. We're told, you know, start early and put some aside because Social Security is not going to be enough and you're going to need an IRA to take care of you and so that you'll have enough when you're retired. It's good planning. But in the parable, God comes to him that night and says, "You fool! This very night your life is being demanded of you, and all your goods and all your grain. What good is that going to do you now? And who is going to get them?" So it seems that the parable is not about the wisdom of preparing for the future, but it's about the foolishness of thinking that you can control the future. If it was up to us, I think the parable would end up by saying, well, he lived a good and happy life and spent his retirement traveling around Galilee and Judea in his RV. So what's wrong with the man in the parable? Obviously, Jesus has some problems with him. It says, first of all, that his land produced abundantly. Well, land does not just produce by itself. Someone has to do the work. Someone has to plant the seed. Someone has to till it. Someone has to harvest it. And he doesn't mention any of that in the parable. The man who is the landowner just assumes that that's going to happen. And he doesn't think about his workers at all. Another thing that happens in the parable is that he has a little conversation with himself. He says, "What should I do?" And it's an opportunity for him to do some deep self-reflection and to think about what's important for himself. Maybe he could think about some other people, but he doesn't. He immediately says, "I know what I'll do. I'll store it up for myself so that I will have a lot." What if he had imagined some alternatives instead of just leaping to the conclusion that it was all for himself? What if he had thought about the workers who had brought in the harvest? And if he had been able to think about sharing some of this abundant harvest with them? What if he thought about the poor in his community, the widows and the orphans that Scripture commands a person to take care of? He could have shared the surplus with them. He could have created goodwill in his community. He could have created a good reputation for himself. And when the day of his death came, he could die with a good conscience instead of a guilty conscience. So the parable is really about greed. Jesus says, be careful. It's a warning. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Well, greed, of course, is one of the seven deadly sins, along with pride, anger, lust, envy, gluttony, and sloth. And all the seven deadly sins are sins of excess. We all need to have food, but an excessive love of food is called gluttony. We all need to have good self-esteem, but an excessive love of our own self is called pride. We all need money to live with, but an excessive love of money is called greed. I've been reading a book called The Soul of Money by Lynn Twist. She's a fundraiser for the Hunger Project. And it's a story about her career and her relationship with money and how she sees other people relate to money. And she says that money by itself is neutral. It doesn't have any power that we don't give it. Money is just basically a way to facilitate the exchange of goods and services. And it only has the value that we attach to it. But she says a lot of us have wounds around money. And I know that's true. My parents grew up in the Great Depression. And they learned that you don't spend any extra money that you don't need to. You use it up, you wear it out, or you make it do. And what they passed on to my brothers and sisters and me was that it's shameful to spend extravagantly. So I have a really hard time spending money, even on things that are really good and I like to spend money on. It's hard for me to really buy gifts. That's a wound I have around money. For some people, money is equated with success. And so they have to show off all their stuff, their possessions, and their money, and flaunt it and throw it around. Because what they're basically saying is that shows that I'm successful. Some people have been brought up where money was a substitute for love and affection. I gave you a diamond ring. Doesn't that show you that I love you? Kids that were given all the money they needed, but weren't given that love and affection that they really craved. In her book, Lynn Twist talks about a man named Jim, who grew up in a small town in Missouri, and his folks owned the only factory in town. They didn't have much time for him, and all the kids at school just assumed that he was a spoiled rich kid and that he was never going to have to work the rest of his life. And so they treated him like that. And he felt angry and ashamed of the money that he had. He grew up. He became an alcoholic. He had two failed marriages, children to take care of. And he came to Lynn asking her for advice. And he poured out this story of resentment and anger around his family and the money that he still had, and how he just felt that he'd been used, and he felt useless, and he wanted to do something more. And as she talked with him, he worked that anger through, and she began to suggest that maybe he had something he could do with his money. And so we started volunteering in one of his schools. And he found that he had a real knack for working with kids with disabilities because he himself felt like he could relate to them. And he began advocating for the schools and raising money for the schools. And he found that that was really a place of rich reward for him because instead of being used by his money, he was able to use his money for good. You know, money, our relationship with money is complicated. We can use it to express our deepest values if we want to. You know, when we are paid for work that is rich and meaningful to us, that's very rewarding. When we can spend our money in ways that are meaningful to us, that's rewarding. When we buy local products from someone we know, there's a big movement now to buy local food so that we support local farmers. That's rewarding. When we buy environmentally conscious products, that's a good way to use our money. There's all kinds of ways for us to use our money. When we give money to organizations that we believe in, that have a purpose and a mission that we think is important, like the church, that's a way that we can use our money faithfully and feel rewarded for it. This is soul work, connecting our soul with the money that we have. Lynn Twist in her book tells a story. She was a fundraiser for the Hunger Project, and this story happened early on in her career in 1978. Someone asked her if she would talk to a group of church people at a church in Harlem, poorest part of New York City. And she was a little reluctant, but she said she would. It was going to be on a Wednesday evening. And as the time drew near, she also got a call from a CEO at a big food company in Chicago, asking her to meet with him that very morning. And she wasn't sure if she could make the planes to get from Chicago to New York, but she scheduled it all out and she agreed. And she went to this the headquarters of this big food company, huge skyscraper. And as she went from the ground floor up to the top, she had to take one set of elevators and then move over in another set. It was so high, there's three elevators to go up. And she felt more and more nervous as she went up. And she felt she was losing contact with the earth, sort of being in this ethereal corporate environment. She got to the CEO's office and she was ushered in and told she had 15 minutes. And he was sitting at his desk with his back to this huge wall of windows that looked out over this amazing scene of Chicago. But he was backlit and she could barely make out his face. So she used her 15 minutes to try to tell him how important the Hunger Project was and get it in a nutshell. And at the end of the 15 minutes, he opened a drawer and pulled out a check for $50,000 and slid it across the desk to her. Well, what had happened with this company was they had done some unethical things and they gotten some bad publicity. And so they figured that if they made a donation to an important charity, it would clean up their corporate image. And that was the purpose for the check. And it was pretty clear that the CEO didn't care one way or the other. To him, it was just a way of doing business. And as she picked up the check, she felt like she was also picking up all the guilt and shame of the corporation, and she was being bought off. So she put the check in her briefcase, and she went down the bank of elevators, caught her plane, made it to Harlem, and when she got there, it was the exact opposite of that corporate office. It was an old church building. It was raining. The building was leaking. There were buckets around the edge of the room catching the drips coming from the ceiling. There's about 75 people there. She was the only white person in the room. And it was clear these people did not have a lot of money. But she started her talk like she did, and she tried to communicate her passion for the Hunger Project, for finding a way to end world hunger. And when she got done, she asked them if they would like to make a donation. And there was a little silence. And one woman named Gertrude stood up at the back of the room. And she says, "My name is Gertrude. And I don't have a lot of money. I don't have a credit card or a checkbook. But I do have some money that I made from cleaning houses. And I know that money is like water. You got to put it in circulation to make it work. And I like you and I like your message. And I've got $50 that I'm going to donate." And she walked it up to the front and she gave it to Lynn. And other people started coming up. They were giving ones and fives and tens and twenties. Not much. But as it came in, it was too much for her to hold. So she opened up her briefcase and they put it in the briefcase on the table there. Came to about $500 altogether. And as she was getting ready to go, she looked at her briefcase and she realized that under that $500, there was that check for $50,000. And the $500 that had been given from the heart, from people who didn't have a lot to give. And she realized at that moment how valuable the $500 was, and how shallow the $50,000 was. So the next day, she took the $50,000 check and she put it in an envelope and mailed it back to the CEO. And she said, "I hope that you'll take this $50,000 and give it to a cause or an organization that you really believe in and that you're committed to support." And she didn't hear anything for quite a while. 5 or 6 years later, she got a letter from the CEO. He had retired, and the company had given him a big payout at his retirement. And he said, I've got plenty to live on, more money than I need. And I look back over my career and all the things I did and the successes I had, and one thing stood out for me, and that was that check that you returned to me. It broke all the rules that I had been taught and that I had been living by. And now that I have extra money, I really want to make a donation to your organization from my heart. And he said that he would give a donation that was many times the size of that $50,000 check. So something happened to that man that brought about a transformation in his relationship with money. And he learned what Gertrude knew already, and that was that money should come from the heart. And that money is like water. It needs to be put into circulation for it to do any good. Just holding on to it for yourself doesn't do any good. Well, money can be used for good, and it can be used for bad. It can be used to wound, and it can be used for fulfilling rich and rewarding purposes. So I hope that we'll all think about our relationship with money and how we can use our money to express our deepest values. As Jesus said, take care, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Amen.